Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Surf and Turf by Mark Jadell, narrated by B.J. Harrison. Chapter 1. Sunday Morning.
"The game can't be played now. Who's going to scout my daughter?" I couldn't believe my ears or eyes. The woman stood there, hands on hips, impossibly poofy lips pressed together, nearly as tight as her hot pink and black camo yoga outfit fit against her curves. She seemed extremely upset that her daughter would miss out on being seen by a talent scout for the local competitive girls' soccer team. And yet, the man's body, lying on the ground, didn't seem to disturb her. Yoga Pants Lady also ignored the woman straddling the guy while performing CPR. It was way too early on Sunday morning for selfish behavior. In fact, it was way too early for just about anything, including dropping dead. I'd gone to the bathroom right after arriving at the soccer field for my niece's championship game, holding the door open for a good-looking man in his early 50s who was leaving as I entered. To my horror, that same man now lay unmoving on the ground, not far from that same door, while a small crowd gathered around. He had been trim and fit, with a close-cropped beard and dark hair, and wore a soccer referee's outfit. He hadn't looked great when I passed him, but then neither did I early in the morning. I wasn't judging. On the other hand, he hadn't looked like he was about to die either. Had anyone called 911? I pulled out my phone. Before I could ask, a woman across from me turned around to face the body.
"The paramedics are close," she announced.
The woman straddling the guy simply nodded and kept counting, doing chest compressions and puffing into the man's mouth on a regular cadence. Pulling her attention away from the medical crisis in front of her, a woman in loose sweats and a puffy jacket said to Yoga Pants Lady,
"Oh, stop pretending. She won't make the comp team anyway. They already have a goalie."
I didn't understand the puffy jacket. Wasn't that more for skiing or colder climates than Silicon Valley? Sure, it was morning on this first day of November, right after a busy Halloween, but the temperature had to be almost 60 degrees with only a light breeze. I considered that shorts weather, although I did sport a windbreaker over my Hawaiian shirt and shorts. Succumbing to wearing the windbreaker was an egregious situation I blamed on reaching 40 earlier this year. Yoga Pants Lady sneered and jabbed her finger at the woman in the puffy jacket.
"And what? You think your Lily will make it instead?"
Wanting to defuse the situation, I almost interrupted to announce that I had heard people yelling while I was otherwise occupied in the bathroom. Just in time, I stopped myself from telling them that all I had heard were muffled voices and took a step back. After all, one of the handful of people here might have killed the man. One person lying on the ground getting CPR was bad enough, especially if I might be the next victim. Yoga Pants Lady wasn't finished dishing out scorn.
"She scored like 3 goals all year?"
She scoffed and shook her head, jostling the short bangs of her bottle blonde hair. Thanks to the building's modern construction techniques, I hadn't been able to make out any of the argument's words, although at least one of the voices had been male. I didn't know if the man lying on the ground had been involved in the dispute, or if his dying immediately afterwards was a mere coincidence. For that matter, I couldn't say if any of these women had been part of the argument either. I glanced around. Besides the few people nearby, no one stirred along the row of houses across the street. No cops in sight. I breathed a sigh of relief that I hadn't said anything out loud. My efforts at curbing my impulsivity had paid off, perhaps with my life. Puffy Jacket Lady wasn't in the mood for a fight. She sighed.
"Lily tries hard. If I'm not going to dream about her making it onto the comp league team, who cares who wins this game?
She puffed out her lips, perhaps in an unconscious attempt to emulate Yoga Pants Lady.
Ridiculous championship game. I mean, they all get stupid plastic trophies, whether they win or lose. What difference does it make?
I almost chimed in to agree when Yoga Pants Lady leaned forward. Her voice didn't lose its sneer as she turned to a new target, a third woman standing quietly to the side.
"Well, Nicole, you're the team mom. What do you think? Should we play?"
The tone she used when saying team mom made me take a step back. Nicole brushed her shoulder-length, straight brunette hair behind her ear. But before she could speak, car tires squealed around the corner.
I jumped, nearly breaking into a run before recognizing the San Jose police car approaching us.
It wasn't them. I was safe. About a month ago, I had crossed paths with a drug gang, totally by accident, and had managed to frustrate them by screwing up the one task they had commanded me to undertake. At least I was an equal opportunity annoyance. I also managed to irritate the police most of the time that I encountered them. Just thinking about the drug gang coming after me or my sister and her girls made me jittery. An ambulance and two more police cars accelerated around the corner next, pulling up to the curb with their lights still flashing but sirens off. No need for sirens on a Sunday morning. Way too early.
Puffy Jacket Lady gasped. "Do you think we'll be on TV?"
She patted her jacket and then her sweats. Eyes wide, she turned to the other ladies.
"I'm only in sweats. How's my hair? Does anyone have a makeup kit I can use?"
The cops had arrived quickly, just a few minutes after the call to 911. Three separate police cars felt like overkill for one body, but the officers probably didn't have much else going on. Apparently even criminals were smart enough to sleep in on a Sunday morning, making this a quiet time for misconduct and traffic accidents. The paramedics took over from the woman doing CPR. After checking the man's vitals, they used their defibrillator twice as they tried to shock him back to life. Only a few moments later, they shook their heads, stopped their efforts, and got to their feet. A wave of sadness washed over me. I wished I could have skipped seeing someone dead this morning. In fact, I wished I could have missed all aspects of this morning. I'd had a very busy week, and Halloween with my nieces and sister turned out to be much more exciting than I would have preferred. I'd figured out who had killed my friend Larry, but ending my evening with a drug gang stalking me wasn't the best recipe for a good night's sleep. Who knew what the drug gang planned to do if they found me? Personally, I'd gladly remain ignorant forever. Last night, after Larry's killer was taken into custody, a car full of gang members had cruised past while I stood on my sister's porch. Once they noticed the cops at the house, the car had zoomed away, hopefully never to return. This was all a big misunderstanding anyway. Was it really such a big deal that I called the wrong number and never brought a car to the gang's leader for a test drive? Sure, the gang had wanted me to deliver it, and I screwed up, so shoot me. Wait, actually, don't. A minor mix-up certainly shouldn't have a drug gang awake and searching the streets early on a Sunday morning. Sleeping late in Silicon Valley was underappreciated by all the young, high-strung business types trying to strike it rich before they had finished their second cup of coffee after their early morning workouts. I appreciated sleeping in. Of course, 40 wasn't considered young in the valley. Nor was I the business type, and I definitely didn't drink coffee. Despite my personal eccentricities, though, I was as interested in striking it rich with a startup as the next person. According to nearly everyone, except my ex-wife, my avoidance of drinking coffee was my strangest peculiarity. To me, that just meant I had done an excellent job of masking my other quirks. I just didn't understand how to select a proper cup of the stuff. I must have been working, or sleeping, and missed the mandatory worldwide class on how to order coffee at Starbucks. Tea was more my thing. A police officer startled me out of my thoughts.
"Sir, could I get your name?"
She stood in front of me, looking quite alert, holding her tablet to take notes.
"I didn't do anything. I came out of the bathroom and I..."
"Sir," she interrupted, "please tell me your name first and then I'll take your statement." "It's Marty. I'm Marty Golden." While she typed, I waited to tell her that I hadn't done anything except hold the door and use the restroom. I certainly hadn't killed the guy. I worked at Rover, the startup driverless car company, and software engineers like me didn't do that sort of thing. I may not like everyone in the company, but I didn't know of any murderers in Rover's engineering department, although certain members of senior management certainly seemed capable of murder. And marketing, too. They were tricky.
Hold on a second. I'll be right back."
Frowning, the officer stepped away from me. My heart rate spiked. What was wrong? Why had learning my name caused the officer to frown? I didn't like frowning police officers. Clearing my throat, I shook myself to try to wake up. I looked around and saw that one officer had taped off the sidewalk about 20 yards away to prevent other people from approaching. Across the street, residents had noticed the flashing lights and come out of their homes to see what had happened. This behavior always seemed somewhat ghoulish to me. People ignored their neighbors, often not even knowing their names, until something terrible happened. Then they rushed over so they'd get a good view. Although if you had to live directly across the street from a large soccer complex, and you have a one-story concrete building blocking much of your view, I suppose it was only fair that they got a good seat for the occasional neighborhood reality show. Where were my sister and nieces, anyway? They weren't standing near the body. I almost got worried that the drug gang had snatched them, before remembering that the cops were here. We were safe. The burst of adrenaline from the screeching car tires, worrying about the drug gang, and the cop frowning at my name, had finally started to kick in. My sister, Lainey, had woken me with a frantic call this morning, telling me they were running late for Sky's soccer game, and I'd better be there too. As if it wasn't bad enough to have been woken from a sound sleep, neither of us remembered that the clocks had turned back last night, as in everyone got to sleep an extra hour. Everyone except me. Well, also the dead guy, and Lainey and her girls, and these other moms and their kids. Maybe they all needed a refresher on how daylight saving time worked.
"Sorry, sir."
The officer had returned quietly while my mind wandered. "The system alerted me that I had to call it in."
"Call what in?"
"You. Your name triggered a codename alert."
"A what?" I didn't understand. What had I done wrong now? In the last 8 hours, I'd gone to sleep, woken up, come here, gone to the bathroom, and seen a dead guy lying on the ground. That pretty much summed up my testimony.
The officer's phone rang. She answered and then handed it to me. Puzzled, I took it from her.
"Hello?"
I said tentatively.
"What did you do? Didn't I just leave you?"
A familiar voice rumbled in my ear.
"How could you get in trouble again so fast?"
Sergeant Mace Jackson didn't sound happy to hear my voice. Despite my anxiety, I felt a warm buzz of contentment expand in my chest. Sergeant Mace Jackson had called me. He called me. Mace, a sergeant in the San Jose Police Department, took a while to warm up to people, or at least to me. I like to think of myself as Mace's secret partner. Of course, he didn't want me to say that in public, Being a secret partner meant he didn't want anyone to know about us working together. His actual words when I mentioned this to him were,
"Don't ever say that again."
But I was sure he only said that because other cops were nearby. Mace and I had become partners about a month ago, when I helped him on a case that endangered my sister. Then, last night, we had worked together again. He hadn't seemed happy to see the car full of gang members drive past Laney's house, but neither was I.
That reminded me. I checked over my shoulder again. Everything still seemed normal.
"Wait," I said to him. "How'd you know I was here?"
Mace didn't respond.
He pretended that he didn't like me, but this only proved he cared. Not that I was counting or anything, but this was now the third time he'd called me. With all the voicemails that I'd left him, or tried to leave him, we weren't close to even on the calls, but three was a huge jump up from two.
Mace finally answered.
"The system called me."
"The police computer system? Why would the police system know to call you? I didn't mention your name or anything. In fact, I've only told this officer my name."
I knew Mace could work wonders, but this made no sense.
Silence filled the line.
"Are you still there?"
I wondered if we'd lost our connection from here in the wilds of suburban San Jose.
Mace sighed.
"There's a tag in our system with your name. I get called whenever your name pops up on an incident anywhere in the city. I set it up last night after that little episode with those gangbangers driving past."
I was right. He did care.
Then I remembered the phrase the officer had used.
"Is that what she meant by a code name alert? Do I have a code name? What is it?"
I wondered if this worked a little like the old bat signal that the police commissioner of Gotham City used to summon Batman. We were much more modern nowadays. Texts and automated phone calls could replace the old method of shining a silhouette of a bat into the sky with a spotlight.
Mace paused for another moment.
"Never mind that. Just tell me what happened. Don't do anything else while you're there. Especially don't bother the officers."
I told him what had happened. Even I was smart enough not to push Mace too hard. While I spoke, the other officer stood next to me and took notes in her tablet. As soon as I hung up with Mace, I asked her,
"What's my code word?"
"I'm sorry, sir, that's confidential," she answered, turning off her tablet.
I had a secret code word! I'd get Mace to tell me what it was later. This news was exciting enough for today.
I recognized I wasn't as important as the President of the United States, who got a truly awesome code name like Eagle, Rawhide, or Renegade. But Mace might have selected something like Hawk or Raven for me. Those would be pretty cool. I was sharp-eyed and pretty smart, so those made sense. I started to text Raj, my friend from work, to tell him about my code name until I realized he was on an airplane somewhere over the Pacific on his way to India for 3 weeks. Plus that whole secret thing. I wouldn't want him to worry about why I was involved with the police, so I'd tell him when he got back. The officer must have spoken to me. I refocused to see her outstretched hand and gave back her phone.
"Do you know how he died?"
We both looked over at the paramedics now standing by the sheet-covered body as they waited for the coroner.
"I'm sorry, sir, I don't know. I couldn't tell you anything if I did. Excuse me, I've got to get statements from these other folks. We'll contact you if we need anything. You're free to leave now."
As she moved on to the next witness, I reached for my phone to text my kids, away at college on the East Coast. I hadn't been very present when they were young, and after my divorce I didn't see them often. Now, with my ex-wife living on the East Coast and my kids both in college out there, I was trying to build a relationship with my kids. Texting was easier than catching them live on the phone, and voicemails weren't really my strong suit anyway. Group text with Eli, Amanda. Marty. I have a secret code name with the police. Eli.
Oh, cool. What is it?
Amanda. What happened? Did you do something? Marty.
Did nothing. Don't know what it is. Maybe hawk, because I'm observant?
Eli.
It could be Hawaiian hawk for your shirts, too.
Amanda.
It's probably dork.
Marty.
Hey, be nice.
Amanda.
Then you and Eli could share it.
Marty.
Thanks.
Sarcastic face emoji.
Eli.
Dad, you can't just say it. You actually have to use the emoji in your texts. Marty. Catch you later.
Relationship building wasn't as easy as it sounded. I finally found Lainey standing with Sky and Megan farther down the sidewalk beyond the police tape. I was glad the girls hadn't been with me and seen the dead guy. Sky was 12 and into science, so she'd probably start asking all sorts of questions about how he died. Or worse, she'd tell me another story about worms that killed insects by vomiting toxic, glowing bacteria into their bodies. Dinner conversations with my niece could be quite dicey. Megan, on the other hand, was much younger and definitely shouldn't see such things. Not that she was the quiet, introverted type. To the contrary, she was so full of energy that she took some medicine to help control her hyperactivity. Megan was 7, or 8, or maybe even 9. I wasn't quite sure, and no one would tell me. They all seemed to think I was joking around when I asked. It wasn't fair. How were uncles supposed to get a serious question answered while not losing their reputation for silliness? At least with Megan's birthday party coming up on Saturday, I'd finally find out the truth. When I reached them, the girls stood facing Lainey with their backs to me.
"But why?"
they asked her simultaneously.
Sky followed up faster.
"Why does our team always get the first morning game after daylight saving?"
She stuck out her tongue at her sister, as if to celebrate her rare victory of talking first.
"The same thing happened in the spring, and half the team showed up at the wrong time. We don't have to forfeit, do we?"
Before Lainey could respond, Megan asked,
"But why do we get an extra hour? Where does it come from?"
Although I agreed with them both, Megan's question was one of the true mysteries in life. Perhaps theoretical physicists understood daylight saving, but mere engineers couldn't answer her question. In fact, engineers didn't answer questions. We fixed things. Like this issue of moving around the clocks to adjust time to the seasons. Was this because the Earth's rotation was out of alignment? No problem. Get some engineers together, and we'd straighten things out in a jiffy. Probably with a lot of duct tape. Plus, we'd get all the clocks calibrated while we were at it, so there'd be no more changing the time every 6 months. No more confusion. Check. I wasn't sure which was worse, trying to explain daylight saving time to my younger niece, watching another of Sky's soccer games, or finding a dead body. This would make the second soccer game I'd attended in less than 2 weeks. Two more than I wanted to see. I had only agreed to go last week because Sky had told me it was their final game. Who knew she meant of the regular season? She had tricked me. Over the girls' heads, I saw my girlfriend, Megan, hurrying up to us. Leave it to me to have a girlfriend with a name almost the same as my young niece's. I hadn't had either only a few months ago. Well, my niece had been my niece, but she had lived up in Spokane until this summer. As for having a girlfriend, it had been a long time since that had last happened. I hadn't realized Megan was going to show up for today's championship game. In fact, I didn't even remember telling Lainey that I would come. Megan hadn't forgotten about daylight saving. She looked well-rested, and she strode toward us wearing skinny jeans and a cute sweater. I appreciated the view as I waited to greet her.
"What happened? Is everything okay?"
she asked, giving me a quick hug and kiss,
and doing some sort of handshake maneuver involving wiggly fingers with my nieces. "We're fine," I answered, consciously holding off telling her about my new secret code word. Building a relationship with a girlfriend meant working on not blurting out what first came to my mind, at least not right away. Weren't Californians all about personal growth?
"Who died?"
Megan asked Lainey as the girls looked on. I must have missed Lainey's initial comment to Megan, something that happened regularly to me. When you were thinking big thoughts and inventing the future, sometimes you missed out on mundane conversations. At least that's how I justified it to myself. Sky answered first. "It was Coach Quince. He was going to be our referee, so that's why we're not playing yet." Megan's head swiveled toward Sky.
"Giovanni Quince?"
Her voice trembled, and her hand started to follow suit. Although sometimes acting as if she were 12 going on 30, Sky didn't actually know everything and merely shrugged. "I don't know. He was our ref for some games, and an assistant coach for the girls' competitive league team." Lainey touched Megan's arm. "I think one of the moms called him Gio." As Megan's hand flew to her mouth, she moaned,
"Vonnie."
She strode over to the police officer standing guard by the barrier. "Was it Giovanni Quince?" she asked insistently. The officer glanced around, checking if anyone was nearby. Seeing none of the other cops, he looked back at Megan and gave a quick nod. She burst into tears. Unsure why my girlfriend had suddenly started crying, I stepped close and threw my arms around her. She let me hold her for a moment before stiffening and pulling back. With her eyes red and cheeks still wet, she stared hard at me.
"He couldn't have just died. He was so alive. Something must have happened to him. We've got to find someone who can tell me what happened to Giovanni."
Chapter 2. Sunday afternoon. I couldn't let her turn to just anyone. Okay, I'll help. I couldn't say no to Megan, especially not with those tearful, mournful eyes. "How did you know him?" Megan took a deep breath to settle herself.
"Through the Renaissance Fair."
I nodded at the mention of Megan's favorite hobby. She devoted much of her spare time to participating in the local Renaissance Fairs, or Ren Fairs, as she called them, starting as a volunteer collecting tickets and then shifting to performing in the plays. She had secured a major role in the play at this weekend's Ren Fair, which was run by the group that Megan had joined. She had been especially busy recently with all the planning. Megan continued,
"Gio was in great shape. He does everything."
More tears began to fall.
"Or he used to."
I offered her an old napkin I found in my pocket, but she wiped her face with the back of her hand instead.
"He was a Ren Fair vendor and acted in some plays. He could joust, too, you know, on horseback with a lance."
She tried to laugh, but her voice sounded a bit strangled.
"Can you believe that? Jousting."
Staring off into the trees with a glassy look in her eyes, Megan made an effort to regain some control. After a long pause, she added,
"He lectures at UCSC. Lectured."
Before lapsing into silence. "So, you were friends?" I ventured, surprised by the intensity of her reaction.
"Yes,"
she answered, a little too quickly for my taste, before looking toward his body. Without meeting my eyes, she added,
"He surfed, too. And I guess Gio also did something with girls' soccer. He was always active. So busy."
I stood there a bit stunned myself. Megan clearly had feelings for this guy, this Gio who did everything, who was so alive. And I had just committed to help figure out how he had died. What if Megan didn't like the answer? How would this affect our relationship?
Megan stepped back from me. I'm going to talk to those cops. Why don't you see what you can learn from...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?